October 23rd, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you. I'm a surefire lover and I always hit the spot. I'm a surefire lover even when I'm really not. Well, I burned some bridges and I made mistakes. I've been accused of being blinder than Blake. Ain't that a surefire lover?
Watch for Pedro Show, happy Saturday. Started off with Impressions, recorded live in Antibes, France, July 27, 1965. Juan Lestines, John Coltrane. And yesterday I got his Love Supreme live in Seattle. I listened to it, I just turned it off, 18 straight hours. Of course, somewhere I was coughed. But and then we heard Nicholas Tremulous in The Prodigals. Surefire lover. Although I think he's man alone there. But you can probably tell I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Nicholas Tremulous aboard. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
Okay. Big thanks to Chris for the connect. I want to learn about your journey through music, Nick.
Alrighty.
Please bring your earliest musical recollection, memory, whatever.
Probably my earliest recollection of music is hearing Charlie Parker on a 78 and crying because I couldn't understand it.
Whoa.
My dad played amateur bebop piano, very much like Bud Powell.
Whoa.
And mother sang blues, and her voice sounded a bit like Dinah Washington, which I could understand.
Yeah.
And my dad, I told my dad, I can't understand this Charlie Parker stuff, and I burst into tears because he would listen to it so much. And so my dad taught me I've Got Rhythm, and then we played Salt Peanuts, and he said, sing I've Got Rhythm. And I learned what bebop players were doing over those songs, and that's my earliest recollection, is my dad taught me to be a musical archaeologist. That everything was understandable as long as you got to the root of it.
Salt Peanuts, Dizzy Gillespie. Now, both, you're not alone because Cab Calloway fired both Diz and Bird for playing what he called Chinese jazz.
Yep.
He had the two best beboppers and threw them out.
I know Louis Armstrong said those guys are playing all the wrong notes, right?
I'm doing my radio show. I had some bullshit caller. Okay, so you had a piano in the pad you grew up in.
Yeah, and that was, that was everything to me. At around 4 years of age or something, there was a Bach piece played on the piano, and Bach is sort of like, you know, he's playing that God's math thing, and it's sort of like looking at an M.C. Escher painting, right? I mean, it just keeps revolving, and it defies gravity, and I started playing it, so my folks threw me into piano lessons, which I didn't do well at. I would just learn by ear because I was, at the time, dyslexic, but people didn't realize it. I was just very left-handed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, McCoy, and, I was reading McCoy Tyner. Was left-handed, and that's why he played the bass notes the way he did on the piano. He'd come down from right? He didn't have his fingers just resting on the keys. He came down like a few inches.
No, he smacked it like the piece of shit it was. You know, and that my father was left-handed too, so we have strong left.
Okay.
And but I play guitar right-handed because it just made no sense to me left-handed. You know,
Kate on bass is like that. She thought the hand with that had all the action was the one on the fretboard.
That's great. Yeah, if I was a bluegrass player, I probably would have felt different about finger picking that style. You know, but I ain't blind Blake. I'm seeing Nick. So.
Okay. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Nick?
First record I bought with my own money was Revolver.
Beatles.
Yeah.
And first gig you went and saw?
Well, it was my cousin's band. It was called Ezra Liege. My cousin was a guitar player. He was a session guy for Kurtom Records.
Oh,
and he had
Kurtom.
A glam.
You're talking Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah, he's the first rock star I ever met.
Wow.
And
I saw Curtis Mayfield's last gig before that fucking thing fell on him in Brooklyn. Played here
that's
at Long Beach,
crazy.
Where I'm going to play tonight. Yeah, it was a free. He was doing a tour of city halls, playing for free out front of the different city halls, and I saw him in Long Beach across the bridge.
You are a lucky man.
Yeah, he's
lucky.
beautiful. You know, going back to the Impressions. And so your cousin's gig was your first gig that you witnessed.
Yeah, he was in a band called Ezra Liege, and they were auditioning for Columbia Records, and it was them, and I believe it was the New York Dolls and Aerosmith, and they were all playing in a high school gymnasium for these A&R guys.
What a trip.
And I was 11 years old or something like that. So the first thing was weird was seeing your cousin with a feather boa on and makeup.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I'd ever heard really loud music. And then it was just, you know, kicking into your teens and, you know.
Well, let me ask you this about school. Were you in the choir, the marching band or shit like that?
No. I barely talked. You know, I really picked up the guitar because I couldn't say things and I figured I'd be able to say them on the guitar better. And I wanted to get laid really bad. You know, I was young, dumb and full of cum and that was the instrument that was going to get me there. And it did, you know.
And not the piano.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all I had to do was go to like a party at someone's house and I learned Stairway to Heaven, which I never liked, but I knew all girls liked. And, you know, you'd go to a party and there were no parents there and you'd say, oh, you like Stairway to Heaven? Hey, you go on a guitar. And inevitably, all girls had an acoustic guitar in their bedroom. So that was my way to, you know, teenage sex.
Not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon, did you do the basement band, garage band, bedroom band?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And, you know, back in those days, everybody had semi-handmade, terrible amplifiers, and we were all just trying to get louder than the next guy.
Yeah.
And I can remember coming out of those basements sometimes, and everybody's voice sounded like Donald Duck. We were playing so loud that my eardrums turned everybody into a cartoon character for a while, you know.
Were you guys writing your own stuff, or were you trying, like me and D Boom, we were trying to copy songs off records?
We were copying songs off records, and we were, of course, I was a bar chord kid like everybody was, and I wouldn't play no sissy chords and stuff like that, except for the Jimi Hendrix chord, which we all loved, which is that sharp nine, I guess is what they call.
Castle's, so
we're playing everything wrong, but we were playing Freddy's Dead because we're Chicago guys, you know, and because I had the badge of honor of meeting Curtis Mayfield in the studio with my cousin one time.
Wow.
And so we did Freddy's Dead, but we did Smoke on the Water and we did, you know, Born to Be Wild and all that stuff that you could learn really quick. I think every generation has a tune they can learn really quick, you know.
Taking Care of Business.
Yeah, there you go. You know, it's just whatever you can learn and whatever's going to get you paid,
Bachman Turner Overdrive. It's a big voice.
Oh, hell yeah.
Band.
You know, Radar Love.
Radar
like
Love.
That.
Well, that's built on a bass line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, bass was my thing, and then, and you know.
What?
What
do you mean? I thought you said acoustic guitar was.
Yeah, but, you know, I was also a singer, and I became a singer, and I realized that in all the songs I really loved, and growing up with Beatles, and listening to Motown, that bass was the second melody. Bass was the other singer on the record.
James Jamerson, Motown. And Curtis Mayfield had a guy named Lucky. Oh, he was great.
That's, Lucky.
He's all
Lucky.
Over that Superfly album.
You know, right, and when Lenny Kravitz first came on the road, he had picked up a band out of Atlanta, and LeBron Scott, his brother, was playing bass with him. Okay. And I just fawned over this guy. I, like, pushed Lenny out of the way to get to LeBron. Because I lived for that band, you know?
Wow.
They were my apostles into music.
Now, did you have a bass guitar as a teenager?
No, I never did, but I always respected it. A kid named Derek Brand, who was a little older than me, who's actually been in my band since 1982.
Whoa.
And still is.
39 years.
Was just a bass player. And to keep me out of the way of his notes, he taught me the importance of bass. It was really self-preservation for him to stay off the instrument, I think. But because of that, when I write a song, the bass line is always something really important to me still to this day. And when there are certain periods in time, like the grunge scene where the bass kind of became more of a tonic instrument and didn't do as many bass lines, it was hard for me to join in on that because I wasn't hearing the bass as the other thing that I heard.
Oh, it got more intense than that, Nick. There was bands, we don't even need a bass player, right?
Yeah. And I was just like, wrong.
That poor, lonely kick drum.
Yeah, I don't like that. You know, I like the way drums sound in a room. I don't like the way they sound through a PA system, and I'm not that crazy. You know, I've used samples, I've used all kinds of stuff, but I really need that bass line.
Otherwise, gave me this what's song the here, Red Line. I want to play this, okay?
Okay.
Before you see the sky,
eternal moan and weaved with the white lights flashing by. And I thought about your eyes as the train began to climb. But I knew that I was gone, out of sight, out of mind. Well, the tracks ain't never real. It'll fool you every time. And the tracks ain't made of steel. On the red line of my mind. And I thought about your eyes. And I thought on your cruel side. But I knew that I was gone. Out of sight. Out of mind.
Yeah. black and white eyes in a prism. Ignorance dissolves into a single blazing color. Have a light. Know the speed for the purpose of gain. Trust is a must. In a prism, percolating, circulating, everything to everyone. Looking up, noticing the grand spectacles of the first balloon flight. The trip is a trip.
before. When a knife was sharp and true, find the man that you can stick it to.
Show. Red Line, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals. Then the collab I got with Sam Lott Ford, Iowa City, called SLWSCC Watt for our new cassette EP, that's what he calls it. Fashion. Victoria Shin with an excerpt from her Kolaka live set. Cure from her brand new album, Silently. Thud. She might play on this Thud album. Your buddy Glenn. Save the World. Guide by Voices, Bob Pollard with another batch of tunes. Black and White, Eyes in a Prism. And finally, Nicholas Tremulous and Prodigals with Stick It to the Man. So, can you remember the first song you wrote, Nick?
Yeah, it was called, you know what? I live in, I've always played in all kinds of bands, Latin bands and all kinds of stuff, but I joined a band with some older guys, and he says, we shouldn't even be in a band unless you see this band that's in the bars right now called Cheap Trick. So I went out with my friend and saw them, and really started writing a lot like Rick Nielsen, and it was a song called Boys Night Out. And it was the first time I'd ever stepped in a studio. It was a 16-track machine, you know, with 2-inch down in a basement studio and recorded for the first time. And I felt like my whole world opened up, you know. The song itself, you know, when you're a kid, I don't care, you know, what anybody says. Some kids are very enlightened, but I was not lyrically yet because I was a reluctant singer at first. And I was all about trying to be the greatest guitar player that I could possibly be. And so, yeah, the song is shit. I hope I don't remember it, you know. Hallmark cards when you're a kid. You're writing Hallmark cards and you're writing about girlfriendy shit and all that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I remember it. It sounded a lot like, Hello Kitties or something like that, you know.
Mommy's all right. Daddy's all right.
Yeah, that kind of vibe, you know, the bunny vibe. Just because we were all crazy about Bunny Carlos.
Yeah. You know? In fact, yeah. I think Mr. Nielsen's got his son on the drums now.
Yeah, which is a little weird because yeah. I play in a band. Now I play with Bunny Carlos in a band called Candy Gold with John Stewart from Wilco and Rick Rizzo from 11th Dream Day. And that's kind of a dream come true to me.
The bass man, Doug, was in that band, right? He went on to do Tortoise later. 11th Day Dream.
Yeah, I think. Doug McComb.
Yeah,
Doug's
good guy.
Yeah, they got the new album out, actually. It's really good. It's fucking beautiful.
Oh, they're still together. Okay.
Yeah, they just it's not like they play together all the time, but, right. You know, every 3 years or so another album comes out, you know?
Can you remember your first gig?
What? Say it again, please.
Can you remember your first
gig? My first gig? Yeah. It's really weird because I bought what used to be called, do you remember when you could buy a guitar in a shopping mall, the old shopping malls? And I spent, you know, my parents had bought me other instruments and I bought my first guitar. And it looked kind of like an ES, but it smelled like balsa wood and weird glue. And it was really horrible. And my cousin came over and it had piano wire strings on it. And he put a set of super slinkies on it. And right before the gig, he said, let me come over and just check it out and make sure it's okay. And so he grabbed my guitar and he started moving the neck while he's playing. And I said, Dino, you got to be careful. I don't think it's built. And he snapped the neck off my guitar.
Oh, shit.
And I had a first gig the next day, man. And so.
With his bare hands, he didn't drop it. He actually pulled the neck off.
Broke it in half. With his hands, he broke it in half. Wow. And he said, look, there's a guitar in my trunk. Go get it. And so I pulled a case out of his trunk and I opened it up and it was a Dan Armstrong clear guitar.
Wow.
I said, well, I guess, are you lending me this? He says, no, I'm giving it to you. Have a nice first gig. And he walked away. And I said, thanks, Dean. And he said, fuck you, Nikki, and drove off.
Yeah.
And then I played in a basement. Yeah, I played in a basement in Bensonville. And we knew like, it was a lot of Latin Kings at the party. And we knew like 3 songs. And finally, one drunk guy came up to me and said, give me that thing. I can't stand here in the same 3 songs. And I knocked him over the head and knocked him cold.
Those
and
were heavy-ass guitars.
I years old, and I already was using the thing as a weapon.
Yeah, but those Lucite.
You could hurt somebody.
Yeah. I don't know what they're made out of. Lucite, plexiglass, some shit. Really strong.
They were heavy. Yeah. So first gig, in a basement, get in a fight, knock a guy cold.
And that Latin, and Latin Kings, too, some gangsters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh man, so that's memorial, memorable.
Yeah,
memorable.
That was an easy gig.
And what was this band called?
Evil Grace. Don't ask me. All I know is this chick I know made us T-shirts that with sequins spelling Evil Grace on it. You know, this was still at a time where glam was cooking, so
sure.
Did most of my shopping in girls' clothing stores at that point, you know, because you could never get anything hip in Chicago unless you went to a place downtown called Smokey Joe's, which had, like, real soulful kind of clothing, you know?
Big lapels.
Flag Brothers Shoes was next door. I had platform shoes that were suede with red piping.
Whoa.
You know, it was good, man.
First gig me and D. Boone saw was T-Rex.
Nice.
Yeah, 1973. And we were young, man, 15 years old or something. And, I thought John Fogerty, you know, flannels was his kind of rock and roll shirt. You know, Mark Bolan had a boa.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know anything about farmers or lumberjacks and shit. I couldn't figure out those bass lines on the Creedence records. You know, his mother wanted us to be in a band right away. So I looked at the album covers and I thought, well, maybe if I wear the singer's shirts, he'll still like me. Because I could not figure out what that dude was playing. Stu Cook. I can nowadays, but not in those days. Thank God for Mr. Jamerson and that Motown bass. That was my biggest teacher. And then overseas with Jack Bruce, those people. So, what became of Evil Grace?
You know, the drummer turned into a guitar player, and I believe he plays in wedding bands and things like that. And the bass player always had a mind for tech, and he went into tech. You know, the thing about growing older, I'm 61 right now, and it's a lot of guys fall by the wayside as you move up.
Oh, yeah.
And you move up, but you continue. You know, it's just, you know, so you deal with that. And then this amazing thing happens when you get older is you start being able to hear all kinds of music at the same time. And they can too. And people start all knowing who the boss is. And it's the song. It never was a guy. It's just a song. You let it tell you what to do. So it's a beautiful thing to be an older musician, you know, in that way. I don't have to talk so goddamn much because we all have sort of a shared thing, you know.
you're talking experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing, and people just realize that. You know, we just did one of our first shows doing this record. We do a version of I Want to Be Your Dog.
Right.
And we do
Stooges.
As a hymn, basically. I just heard it in my head that way. But at the end of the night, we did it Stooges style, and in the middle of it, we play a Love Supreme. Because there was a certain point in my life where I realized they were these exact same song, you know? And when you put them together, it makes total sense. I told the horn players that, and we didn't rehearse it. I just said, we're going into a Love Supreme in the middle, and they did. And it was beautiful.
You know what? Gorgeous. You know, I helped them for 125 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time we did L.A. Blues, we'd always go into L.A. Blues after Funhouse. And during the wipeout part, you know, I would play the bass line of Love Supreme under it, and it was cool with them. I put in a little Giant Steps, too, but, yeah, always. And sometimes Brother Steve would come in on the sax, and Scotty would play the drums to it, sort of. But, yeah, Upper Egypt, Lower Egypt, that's the bass lick to fucking Little Doll. You're right. Music is music. Totally right.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing, and I think why we were attracted and why you were attracted to, you know, the British blues bands and stuff like that. When I listen back to, like, Whipping Post, even, by the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, I know that one.
I kind of realized, and Manic Depression by Hendrix and all that, I kind of realized everybody's chasing Coltrane those years.
Well, you know, there's an interview where he said, Mitch Mitchell is my Elvin Jones. We're at the end of the first... First hour, October 23, 2021, Dish Watt Peter's special guest, Nicholas Tremulous. Hold tight for hour two. October 23rd, 2021, it's the second hour of Watt for Pedro's.
Disappear in Dumb City. that they would search for her forever. But dumb city tears were quickly cold. Dumb city. Mm, yeah. Dumb.
about on the Facebook and make you be blinking on the faces that you normally face in real when you wake up and you can't see her. Yeah, it's a Google, but the stars is under your bed. Why don't you find it while I find you? Of an internet scenario, or I just a thought. When you see me, do you see me? When you see all the JPEGs that I've seen, and all the facts that I've seen, and all the JPEGs that I've seen. Are you a fiend when your SMS is back in the day? SMS was under the dress and under your clothes was the wood in which you whittle, but time regrets is its riddle. Sit on face to face with Baba Walker walking Broadway to H.C. Falter and then attack like a dog in the heat, a cop in the beat. Is that the job of a reporter? Then it's in Trump's Everton, but the palace, everything but the malice. And when you cover your mouth over a salad, a vegetarian regimen, slapping bodies with oil. And if you try to bend it with salt, it better come from the seas. And that's the place where they found me. And when they put me back, the empire dissolves. And I won't bring the fallen, and I know the men that discovered all the MC, even put it on the internet. That shit is free, that shit is free. I'm into medicine, I wanted to be before they came and found me. On the internet, that shit is free. That shit is freeing me from everything I wanted to see before they came and found me. Oh, what you doing to my time? How you do that to my time? Oh, what you doing to my time? You're never gonna make me pay. So what you doing to my time? How you do that to my time? What you doing to my time? You think they put the apples together? You might get the lava from being the bosses of the monsters that they call entertainers. That's a no-brainer. I don't need a trainer to tell me how to duck and make a media team. What? Yes, me. I show you everything you need to be free. Get the book. It's not audio. Read it and listen to me. Cause the air to do it is my own social security. Why don't you take the damn book? It's not a book or a rap, it's in the Bible. It's just another fantasy of porn and for its own survival. Another fantasy of porn and for its own survival. Oh, but it's going to my time. How you do that to my time? Oh, but it's going to my time. You're never going to make me pay. Oh, but it's going to my time. How you do that to my time? Oh, but it's going to my time.
now. The sunlight from the rain, a window from a heart, the center of the night, the jury's bad decision. Frozen the horizon, a vertical incision, the river from the sky. I'm quite sure you know that things can change, and love may numb within. Sure you've heard the clickety-clack, the heels make when she walks away.
Just started the second hour off with Dumb City, dumb fucking host, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals, Dumb City, Landowner, Extreme Youth, Harry Reeve, Allotment, Andre Vita, Matang, See in Winter, ID DeFemel, and any idiot, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals. And it's just like deja vu all over again, people. Sorry, Mr. Yogi Bear. Prodigals, enlighten me, please, Nick.
You know what it was is that I went back to starting writing for a large band again and just making demo tapes with samples and stuff like that. And I sort of I've always had a band name, and we were called Nicholas Tremulous Orchestra forever. And I said, okay, now we're actually an orchestra, but I got to let people know something new's happening. So it just kind of came to me, and there were 9 of us in the band at the time. So I called them the Prodigal 9. Which I thought was a cool name. And these were musicians I knew from, AACM groups, people coming out of that whole art ensemble of Chicago to people that were playing in Latin bands. And I just pushed them all together to try to make this new kind of street folk music that we were having here. And it just kind of stuck. I like the name of it, you know, because I think they're all, you know, I'd play in any one of their groups. I would be their soldier any day of the week. So I wanted to give them something that kind of honored who they were and that they were special.
Yeah.
You know?
So where was this album done?
This album was done in Chicago.
Okay.
It's kind of a dark story if you want to hear it.
Great.
We're having so much fun. But so I got COVID from my daughter who had gotten her job moved over across from the Trump Towers, and somebody staying at the Trump Towers gave her COVID. But I have diabetes, so I got very sick, 104 degrees, 5 weeks.
Oh, shit.
And on the fifth week, my son died in a car accident.
Oh.
And he left me with his twin babies that were just about to turn two. And at this point, when I got sick, my friend Cheryl, who did a lot of my publicity and stuff, said, we should do a GoFundMe. And I said, no, wait, I want to make this record. And then he died, and I didn't have enough money to put him in the ground, you know. And so I said, all right, go do a GoFundMe. And it strangely went through the roof. I got more money than I needed to do that. But I was able to stop time for a while. And the only thing I needed to do to say thank you, the only thing I could think of was to make this record and make it with no instruments left in my imagination. And so I called Rob Fraboni, the producer of Planet Waves and Goathead Soup and everything else. I called him because he was my friend, and talked to Ricky Barnes, who had the studio here in Chicago and was my guitar player. And in 8 days, without a rehearsal, we recorded this album.
Damn. Now, with the and songs, did you already have the songs? Were you writing those?
I already had the songs, and okay. I don't even call them demos. I make maps. Because I do a lot of film score work, I know how to pick the right kind of things to do, horn arrangements and things like that. And then I sent them out to these people that I played with, some of which had played these songs live, and others that were new things. And that was a way of them being able to do their homework and get it. And these guys were starving to play. It was in the middle of the pandemic, and they didn't give a shit. You know, because when you line up five horns,
yeah,
they can't wear masks, and they just knew it. Now, the trombone player, Andy, had to live in the basement until he got tested because his wife wouldn't let him back in the house after the session. But the fact of the matter is everybody took the bullet for me because they knew my life was, you know, that I was doing this 2 months after and that I was a basket case, that I was crazy. And I thought, the funny thing about albums is you think they're going to heal you, but albums take. They don't give, really, you know?
Yeah.
And so we just sat every day and made this record. And then we went out to Stamford, Connecticut to the studio and mixed it. And, yeah, I mean, it's a real place in time, and that's what I love about it. It's an actual moment in time. Now, having said that, I love the records of Curtis Mayfield. I love Donny Hathaway records. I love big arrangements. And I wonder if they're ever going to be back. This record was made and financed by people's love for me in a time of supreme grief. But does it take a catastrophic moment for an artist to make the record they hear in their head anymore?
Yeah.
And that's a big question, because there's no way I'm going to make my money back on it, you know, or the amount of money. And people aren't going to do that very easily anymore because we can't tour as much, you know, and stuff like that. But we still need to make these beautiful records. And people like friends of mine, like David Murray, the sax player, who's a lovely arranger, he can't afford to make those kind of records anymore that he made when Black Saint Records was around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's all good and well for people that are huge pop artists. But look, man, there's a lot of music to be made out there. And you can't, and if you're a person that likes to capture great musicians, you need a good studio and you need microphones and you need everything else. What's going to happen? What if you're not a pop artist anymore? You know,
good
I don't want to have, you know,
good point.
It
good
shouldn't
point.
Have to happen this way is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a beautifully cultured country, and it needs to be celebrated. And we are the infantry of the digital age, and we've had our ass kicked by it. So, kind of a strange world.
You gave me this tune, Amanda and the God's Honest Truth. Let's play it.
Yeah.
This is the story of Amanda, a.k.a. Andy. Like a weapon, some sinister possession. You would read about in books by lonely men who acted out their vengeance with a pen. But not Amanda. See, she's a girl of action who gains her satisfaction without words or empty threats. No tears, no regrets. Say this is the story of a hero. You could say it's just the folly of the damned. You could say it's just a lie or box office gold. But it's the God's honest truth. At least that's what I'm told. Down in Garfield Park in a high rise. Dark, you can feel his anger growing. The footsteps getting louder like a beeping of a radar. And her eyes are shutting tighter. Is it fear inside the knowing that keeps the wind blowing? The roaring indecision, the beatings and the bruises, the weakness and the shame of it, the countless sad excuses. Was it Jesus or the devil's hand that kept her in the hands? Was it promises that night she found a fully loaded 45 on Independence Drive? You could say this is the story of a hero. You could say it's just the folly of the damned. You could say it's just a lie, a box office gold. But it's the God's honest truth. At least that's what I'm told.
Amanda,
What for Pedro show. Start off that chunk of music. Nicholas Tremblous and the Prodigals with Amanda and the God's Honest Truth. Then Ray Shin. Parapet. A Place with No Name from Babes, New York City. That band name just, I don't know.
Sergio Leone in the band? Yes, you know, yeah.
Okay. And then Tom with live piano playing at Thessaloniki. That's in Greece, huh? And finally, yeah, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals. Let it out. So, process. Do you carry a little book of lyrics?
No, but I always write them down on paper. My main thing is, at least at this point in my life, I never have writer's block. I mean, it's always there, but something exotic's got to pull me into writing again. Some reason to do it that makes me feel excited. Reloving Afro-Cuban music was the reason that this record came out. It's why I have two percussionists in the band, because I just, you know, my old man took me to see Eddie Palmieri when I was 11 and expounded on the piano players and all that stuff. Yeah. And I just kind of brought back in. Really, the inspiration on this record is about 12 blocks in Chicago. You've been to this town. You realize that you
can hear just about it. I was conceived in that town. I was born in Portsmouth, Virginia, but I was conceived in Chicago, Illinois.
Well, that's a good thing, you know.
She told me you addressed
the apartment. I hope you know your father.
There was a, probably still is, great show. It's a boot camp for the Navy, and that's where he was like 18, 19 years old, 18 years old.
The old naval base. I don't know if it's, I don't believe it's here anymore, but I know where it was.
Right. Great Shore or Great Lake Shore. I can't remember. Anyway, so I have a connect. So 12 blocks of downtown is what this album's about.
Yeah, well, it's 12 blocks any part of the city because you can hear every kind of music. Segregation ain't the greatest thing in the world, but what it did was preserve Greek town, Ukrainian village, Puerto Rican town, little village, Pilsen, the Mexican part of town, and you can hear authentic and eat authentic and dress authentic in any part of Chicago. So if you walk just about 12 blocks, it's like walking the world.
Yeah. When I started touring in the early 80s, Chicago was the most northern town you could get real Mexican chow.
Right. Third largest Mexican community.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, way back, it wasn't like a trendy thing. That was a neighborhood. Yeah. North side, right?
Right. Yeah. And so that's the whole, and South Side too, 18th Street, Pilsen area. But that's kind of all this is, was just I got old enough to be able to combine all those streets. You know?
You know, I read this Tom Sweat book on Sun Ra, and he, you know, he's from Birmingham, Alabama, but he goes up to Chicago and Fletcher Henderson, right? The R&B stuff. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's trippy how Chicago gets overlooked, man. Big shoulders. Big time.
Especially, well, you know, that's Midwest. The weird thing. That's what they call it, the second city, you know. I don't know if it's that way still, but we all had a chip on our shoulders a little bit. Me and Munch, Daryl Jones, who I played with a lot and stuff, we were talking about the fact that we rehearsed really hard because we figured from where we were, we had to get the job. You know what I mean? Sure. There's a little anger in all of our rehearsals.
Well, that wind, I'll tell you, that wind coming off the lake can be a little biting on the... You're talking about chilly there in Hudson, but man.
Oh. It's a pissed off city. You know what I mean?
In summertime, summertime can be pretty blazing, sweaty, humid. Yeah, oh my God. No, yeah. It's not a north-south thing. It's east of the Rockies.
It's not free. Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, October 23rd, 2021. This spot, Pedro's your special guest, Nicholas Tremulous. Pull tap for hour three. October 23rd, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
I'm find it hard to find the vigor of my youth. I find it hard to pull the trigger on what's true. If the future has arrived and the DJ can't be live, tell me why you wear that shirt when you ain't heard the MC5. I'm fucking tired. I'm motherfucking tired. You heard me. All these slogans that keep running through my head, like toboggans on a snow hill made of dread. Too much has been decided by faith so unrequited, and it makes them so delighted when they see us so divided. I'm fucking tired. I'm motherfucking tired. I'm always running around from one place to another, as if being chased by some contorted royal brother. And now they're starting on the train, waiting lines like methadone. Yeah, but high as like cicadas, looping through me like tornadoes. Fucking tired. Walking around without a care, it makes them disagreeable, the trouble unforeseeable, that hounds them down like fugitives and knocks them out like pugilistic heavyweights with crooked gloves.
Touch it, ain't tainted dead.
That sound around your head like lyrics of the dead, a poison pen that's spitting fire, contaminated choir, and recipients of tenements are drowning in the sediment, and golden shower presidents is all so decadent, and I'm fucking tired. I'm motherfucking tired. Huh? I'm fucking tired. Ooh, I'm fucking tired. I'm so tired I can't stand myself. Fucking tired.
creeping through my window. Another day begins, and memories rush in to steer me on my way. Will it be the same as yesterday? Is someone looking for me? Someone out there waiting to adore me, destroy me? Or could it be a beautiful desire? Will it take me down or take me higher? I walk on a cold street with a warm heart, drunk and gorgeous, a Saturday night. I walk on a cold street with a warm heart, drunk and gorgeous, a Saturday night. I can't find no dealer, no moonlight healer, no streetwise doctor gonna get me where I gotta. I'm always on my own. But don't you get me wrong, I know what I'm looking for. My heart ain't never blind, it's the fugitive kind. And it runs through dangerous ravines. The apoplectic scenes that push me out the door. Babe, I must confess, every time you needed more, I gave you less. I walk on a cold street with a warm heart, drop dead gorgeous for Saturday night. I walk on a cold street with a warm heart, drop dead gorgeous for Saturday night.
For Pedro Show. Start off third hour. Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals with Fucking Tired. Yes, a true story, people. Reboot with part four of The Gollum, Michael Morley. I think there's two more parts. Cold Streets, Warm Heart, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Saturday Night, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals. So, you know, all this action in Chicago, but right now you're in Hudson, New York.
Yeah.
But it's a musical proj.
It's really kind of interesting. I learned one thing about it. Rob told me that Rob Fraboni told me that the live room at this place, which is the church, is 1 inch different than the B room at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's insane. How is that? And it's because both Abbey Road and this church were designed by a thing called the Golden Mean, which Leonardo da Vinci used as the dimensions of what a room should be in a cathedral and in an abbey and in everything else. So how strange is that, you know? I love that.
Have you been to the one in London?
Never, ever.
It looks like, you know, somebody was just on the show. We were talking about this. You would not think it's the studio. It looks like row houses. Looks like it's in a neighborhood, you know? Yeah, unassuming. And well, I heard by the time I recorded there, they weren't doing it anymore, but they used to, like, wear lab coats and shit there.
That's right. That's why I like working with Fraboni, because he studied with the lab coat boys,
yes. It's amazing stuff, especially that Delia Derbyshire and the BBC Workshop stuff, you know? Like themed Doctor Who. Yeah, all this. They weren't even using synthesizers. These were like tapes and oscillators.
Yeah, all that Mellotron and stuff.
Right. And yeah, literally tape going doorknobs and all that kind of stuff. So this prod you got going, they're building the studio now.
Yeah, they are. We're going to record some of it at the same place that my record was made, Rex Trax Recording, which is a studio owned by my guitar player, Rick Burns, who's also a great engineer producer. So we're going to do part of it there and then part of it here when it's ready to be done here, it sounds like. And it's Sean Walsh, the last name has an E at the end of it, and he writes sturdy as hell, man. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because you said off air, you said, we're doing right now what me and you are doing.
Yeah, that's what songwriting is. You just start, you know, a big part of it, of a relationship, is just talking about your lives. And the sort of flagpoles that popped up, the things you learned, and then you go back to the song. And the writing's easier because you have this shared past. You have to create a shared past, don't you? I mean, otherwise, you're just an employee, and you can't be an employee when it comes to the song, except for the song. You know, it makes you more selfless about things and realizes that your lives are entwined, you know.
Yeah. And aiding and abetting the tune is the main responsibility, obligation.
Right. You know, we work towards the song, and that's it. That's the other great thing. You know, it's just if you join a band and there's a boss, something's wrong. The song's always the boss, don't you think?
That's a great way of thinking.
Well, I became a musician to feel free, to have liberty. I didn't become a musician to work for somebody. Good God.
No, but you kind of do work for the song. I learned that as a bass player.
Well, that's why bass is so beautiful, you lucky bastard.
It's not the most notes, right? It's always the search for the correct notes. But humans, the more they do something, the more they got to pile it on. With bass, we get smaller and smaller if we do that. You can't play the most notes.
You know, it's so exciting. You know, I get excited about Paul Chambers on Coltrane stuff, the way he plays.
Paul Chambers, Jesus.
But I get just as excited about listening to Satisfaction in that major bass against that, you know, pentatonic guitar line. It's absolute bloody genius as much as Night in Tunisia as anything else. I get just as excited, you know?
Yeah, that's trippy. I think Keith Richard, right? I don't know if that's Bill Wyman. It might be Keith Richard.
But well,
the way he leaves out notes, you know, we call that working the holes, playing the holes. It's a trippy thing, but on bass, you know, probably drummers have to learn how to do that stuff, too.
Yeah.
You gave me this tune, interesting, J. Paul Getty.
Yeah.
Like J. Paul Getty, motherfuckers with machetes, reflections in a golden eye, in the land of lies. Reflections in a golden eye in the land of lies. It's like J. Paul Getty, motherfuckers with machetes. Reflections in a golden eye in the land of lies.
I woke up someone else today. I barely recognized me. I was a stranger to myself, yeah. And now my words were disillusion. And right from wrong was in confusion. And I can't say why, but I'm gonna try.
It's like J. Paul Getty, motherfuckers with machetes.
Motherfuckers.
Reflections in a golden eye.
Reflections in a golden eye.
It's like J. Paul Getty.
J. Paul Getty.
Motherfuckers with machetes.
Motherfuckers.
Reflections in a golden eye.
Reflections in a golden eye. In the land of lies, I see it on many faces, in many hearts and many places. It's like something that was lost, yeah, something holy that was needed, that's been blended and depleted by the greed of the conceited. The one is broken down and pleaded, and I can't say why, but I'm gonna try.
Like J. Paul Getty, motherfuckers with machetes.
Motherfuckers.
Reflections in a golden eye.
Reflections in a golden eye. In the land of lies.
Like J. Paul Getty.
J. Paul Getty.
Motherfuckers with machetes.
Motherfuckers.
Reflections in a golden eye. Reflections in a golden eye.
In the land of lies.
J. Paul Getty.
Motherfuckers with machetes. Motherfuckers.
Reflections in a golden eye.
In the land of lies.
In the land of lies.
In the land of lies.
means you must be scared. When a man is afraid, he doesn't perceive. So it almost always happens that that of which one is afraid doesn't exist.
I am very difference between us and those who make mock of such efforts is we know where we're going. We know what we're doing. And we're moving forward on a very positive, laudable, decent track. We are doing our jobs. That cannot be said for others. I am very glad to have had this opportunity to talk to you. And I hope the data I have given you is of some aid and assistance in clarifying what is going on, in dispelling any doubts or wonders. And more importantly, my hope is use in aligning the efforts to come forward and to make this a better world and a better universe. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate what you're doing. I need your help. And I'm very grateful for what you have done. Goodbye for now. I will see you up the line at the other end of the bridge.
Webley 38 or Smith & Wesson or Colt or something like that, and doing R245. That exteriorizes most anybody.
This is tape recording 1176 C24 RJ.
Which follows the actual explosion as its picture, and it's very tricked up, so that you actually bunch of Satans and they get bombed. That is one. That is one of the That's wild. That is one of the explosions that is shown, and there are several explosions shown in sequence. So actually, what happened was there's the real explosion, which is the guy boxed up in a box, or he is walking around, or some of the loyal officers that were caught here and so on were chained on the top of buildings and so on. So when the bomb hit, why, they would be picked off into the fantastic hundreds of mile an hour, thousands of mile an hour winds of a gross, complete atomic explosion all over the planet. And they were whirled in these terrific winds and so on. Everybody on the planet was killed. And about 3 days afterwards is actually when the implanter started operating. They had it all rigged to operate. And then, to make a long story short, you can easily get into one of the false explosions. There's the fairy queen, the fairy palace. So it's supposed to be a fairy palace. Dive down to save somebody because there's been an explosion. So that's all planned. So there's false start after false start after false start to the incident. What it's really designed to do is to make the individual cease and desist from creation and to knock out overpopulation. This is one of the big ideas they have, that if they just did all this, then they get rid of all overpopulation.
And shall, out of this chaos of contention, let us bring peace to pointless fight. Why do we court the whore called war? Why make of earth a shattered night? There's no ecstasy in killing. Love alone can make man willing. Hear me, warriors. Hear me, mothers. There is no pay in slaughtered brothers.
Resisting them and are necessary to carry off this type of operation. So OTs do best with OTs. The mission of organizations is to form the first part of the bridge up from the WOG world up to the level of clear. It is as far from clear to OT as it is from WOG to clear. Organizations are performing their actions in this very splendidly. The only thing that they could improve would be holding in ethics more strongly and getting tech more exactly rendered, having their examinations more precise since endless trouble comes from misdeclares, and expanding further into the public more quickly. This is what organizations ought to be doing. The individual auditor and Scientologist is performing his mission very, very well and is doing marvelously.
You find yourself with fires occasionally set by tramps who need a job.
In the lower grades,
you find all sorts of interesting complications, but very little viciousness. There was a fellow there who kept telling me that he was on the run because he had taken a knife to a fellow and stabbed him in the belly.
With the environment and the world in which he lives,
telling me that this was why he was on the run.
And with this concern comes the realization that all has not been well.
He told me often enough till I finally realized
that he was
really
worried. And it is very true that a great catastrophe occurred on this planet. And in the other 75
he wasn't running
planets,
because he
which formed this confederacy 75 million years ago. It has since that time been a desert, and it has been the lot of just a handful to try to push its technology up to a level where someone might adventure forward, penetrate the catastrophe, and undo it.
However,
we're well on our way to making this occur.
Burned off his feet, so I loaned
as
him
one's ability to confront increases, his level of responsibility increases. And an
he was
OT
on another
cannot
crew
be an OT
by the time I left
world,
the area, and I went back to Helena.
Or a universe,
when I got back to
man.
Helena, I said to myself, well, I'll
although
never see those boots again.
The scope of the work is almost unimaginably extensive.
This fellow stole a car and drove 200
it
miles.
It is nevertheless true that we are making definite and positive inroads upon this, and we will bring it off. We are no longer dealing with the time span of man, which is 70 years,
and
we are dealing
me my
with
boots.
The centuries.
And then he
and
drove
we have enough
back
time
and left it parked
at the upper levels to bring it
and
on.
Went his way.
Providing
they have
we
strange
work
ways
at the lower levels and within the framework of the
life.
Society itself to
but
prevent it from destroying
scared.
Itself.
They are scared of the police, however.
Our purposes and goals. It possibly is a bit above your reality to say that we intend
that
to salvage this sector. No one has
yeah,
been able to
yeah, a bunch
do
of people who are scared.
Years.
So they go and
we
get themselves a job and then talk this period in the believing that they have to be armed to the teeth
and misery
with steel teeth.
Life is not necessarily a miserable
and then
mess.
You have a bunch of
and
fellows who are scared of authority
is not
and orders,
to
get that they're only really scared of orders.
It is
they're
very easy to remedy the general situation. There are many people out
and they fly
in
back
society
who
are only too glad to have us,
opposed,
only too
and
glad
you get
to help,
stories,
and who will
you
happily jump forward. That
you get
the malady
all of the
from which they suffer
that you read
is actually
in the
designed
FBI
to stop or impede such a movement
and you
as
get
ours
this problem called criminality.
Is not of any
I don't
great
know what would happen if
you
suddenly removed all the police.
We have already mastered
I don't know really what would happen.
Those things necessary to
I don't know what would happen to police if you suddenly removed all the criminals, but I can guess. They would start, as they are doing today, attacking the common citizen. They evidently rarely arrest the criminal today. They will arrest, however, the honest citizen. If you read of some honest citizen being shot, you will read the next paragraph how the police are investigating him. Somebody, a minister shot, the police are investigating his past. No word said about where the fellow went that shot him or whether the police were onto them or not. Watch that, because it is a symptom of police closing terminals with the criminals. It's the deterioration of the game called cops and robbers. Television is televising it out of sight. When the cops and robber game is gone, then there will be no other plot that anybody can film for television. They've already worn out the cowboy in the white hat and the cowboy in the black hat. That's
no one did it.
That's gone. I mean, nobody will look at that anymore. They just say, well, that's going to turn out. The fellow in white hat's going to win. They've been conditioned to believing this, so it's no game condition. It's against the law to have the fellow in the black hat win and the cowboy picture, and they've ruined the game.
Inside our organizations and those people who are making slighting remarks about what is going on are simply in their own way trying to stop the forward progress. All they will really succeed in doing is stopping themselves. In that, you have not heard of me directly, or from me directly, here for some little time. I thought I had better have a talk with you and tell you what it was all about and tell you where things sat now. And I can assure you that anyone connected with the great catastrophe of ages back has been dead almost the same length of time. They brought about the catastrophe and they perished within 6 years. We do not have any enemies except suppressive, dramatizing men who are themselves the victims of something that happened here. From here on, the world will change. But if it changes at all, and if it recovers, it will be because of the Scientologist. It will be because because of the auditor and his technical skill. It will be because of the organization and the organization staff member and his dedication. In all the broad universe, there is no other hope for man than ourselves. This is a tremendous responsibility. I have borne it too long alone. You share it with me now. This is, however, the game in which everyone wins, no matter what ethics action is taken, no matter what activities go forward. In the ultimate, everyone will win. I am very thankful that you exist. I need your help. I need your support. And no matter what you are doing in Scientology, outside or inside organizations, you are helping me, and you are helping us. And you are also moving forward to the resolution of aberration, war, and dismay in this universe. An essential difference between us and those who make mock of such efforts is we know where we're going, we know what we're doing, and we're moving forward on a very positive, laudable, decent track. We are doing our jobs. That cannot be said for others. I am very glad to have had this opportunity to talk to you, and I hope the data I have given you is of some aid and assistance in clarifying what is going on, in dispelling any doubts or wonders, and more importantly, I hope is use in aligning the efforts to come forward and to make this a better world and a better universe. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate what you're doing. I need your help. And I'm very grateful for what you have done. Goodbye for now. I will see you up the line at the other end of the bridge.
I was waiting in a car for a savior, trying to hide a desperate behavior. And when I come, the hope it will save me. But part of Jesus always betrays me, and I can't be found. I won't be found. Can't be found. I won't be found. I see my life in silhouette, backlit by a sun that steals away my flaw. When I float out the door, I see my life in silhouette, a featureless futurette, a world burned dry for a boy so wet. And I can't be found. I won't be found. I can't be found. I won't be found. 'Cause there's trouble on the streets, wild madness and trouble on the streets. Mama, come shake it for me. Pump up the volume till I can't see the trouble I'm in. That's coming to win. Sweet mama, please shake that ass. I'm banging out beats on the mercy seat. I'd hit the gas, but I got no feet. And I can't be found. Can't be found. I won't be found. Big Chief says he's coming to town to grind my bones below the ground with his hammerhead hands and his razor teeth. Big Chief knocking on my door with vengeful eyes and settled scores. He wants to be made whole, but it won't find me. can't be found. I won't be found, I can't be found. I won't be found, cause there's trouble on the streets. War and frustration, man, trouble on the streets. And troubles on the streets. Dying alone in trouble on the streets. Yeah. I can't be found. I won't be found. I can't be found. I won't be found.
Watch for Fever Show's final music for this edition. J. Paul Getty started off. Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals. Then LRH in his own words, my guess, L. Ron Hubbard, people. Part 3 of 3, Special Collections. This was Samuel Rowell, who was on the show a few episodes ago. And her little side thing besides playing bass. And finally, Nicholas Tremulous and the Prodigals with I Can't Be Found. So tell me about this J. Paul Getty. It's based on a childhood memory?
You remember when we were youngins? You were probably too young at the time, though.
I'm actually older than you, Nick. I'm 63. I'll be 64 in December.
Okay, so what were the 50s like, man? No, I'm joking. Okay. there was this, you know, I'd never heard of J. Paul Getty, but his grandson got kidnapped.
That's right.
You remember
year.
This. And they asked for $3 million, I believe, is what it was for him. And the grandpa said no. And so which freaked me out because it was always in the news. And so they cut off the grandkid's ear
right. And
sent it to the grandfather. And he said no. And this has frightened me as a child. And a year and a half later or so, they finally agreed at $300,000, and they let go of his grandson, who I think a month and a half later committed suicide.
Yeah.
But it made me realize as a kid that there was greed in the world. And that's how that idea, you know, it was just something that haunted me all my life that someone's grandpa could do that.
Yeah.
And it just, I was driving in a car and it just came to me like Dr. Seuss. J. Paul Getty, motherfuckers with machetes, reflecting golden eye.
That's what you say, motherfucker with machete, yeah.
Yeah, reflections in a golden eye,
yeah.
Because I'd read that book as a kid by Carson McCullers, In a Land of Lies. And that's all it really was just this sort of Dr. Seuss rhyme that rolled in my head. In fact, I was picking up Rick Rizzo, and I said, hey, what do you think of this? And he said, wow, that's wild. He said, but what the hell are you going to do with it? I said, I have no idea. And then that song came, you know?
You did something with it.
Yeah. Got to do your best.
Yeah.
You get something like that, you better do something with it. Otherwise, you're going to get Tourette's syndrome, you know?
Yeah, right. Now, this Hudson Proj, it ain't like Prodigals, though.
No, this is you know, more, you know, Sean writes sturdy. That's the main thing. If I'm going to work with anybody, I'm basically a rock guitar player. I mean, I've backed up. You know, beautiful jazz musicians. I've also played with Richard Hell. You know,
yeah,
what I mean,
I love
so
Richard
it's not like, you know, I love punk rock and I love everything. It's just it's all sort of a culmination of things. If I had to say who Sean writes like, it's a bit like Steve Earle. But when somebody writes, so he writes good solid Louisville baseball bats. So they're not too hard to smack.
Yeah,
you know that. That's the good thing. It's just when a song's sturdy, you can bat it around. That's why Dylan these days can smack his tunes all over the place because they're written sturdy enough, you know?
Yeah.
I like a sturdy song, you know? Don't you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because you can take them any which way. You can interpret them the way you want to interpret them, you know? Which is love.
And it also is one of these fundamental things that I understand, and I came to music is music, and all that genre stuff is bullshit.
Yeah. That's for the record bins, you know, but it takes a few years. It takes a few years to climb over the record bin and see what's going on, you know.
Good
you know,
point,
if you don't let yourself be free in music at one point. Yeah. Man, you're like a time-stamped chicken trying to see over the wrapper to see when you expire. No?
Absolutely. So, Greg, I'm going to wish you all the luck in the world with this new project, what you did with your Prodigals, and you're going to go back and probably do more music with them, right?
I would think so, but one never knows, you know. So somebody asked me what my style was, and I said probably unpredictability.
Okay, that's something you can count on.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Next, right? Nick, thanks so much for being on the show, truly.
Thanks, man. I hope we get to play together sometime.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, bitchin'.
I think we'd have a lot of laughs.
Yeah, a lot of laughs. People, it's been October 23, 2021. Just watch Pedro, so keep your powder dry.